By the red sun of Krypton, you are listening to Breaking the Panel. Coming up on today's show, we talk about some new chapters coming for some classic comic stories like The Dark Knight and Sandman, and we get a visit from a very special guest. He's not just a comic book fan, he's a comic book man, Mr. Zipes. See, that's why we do the, that's why we do posts.
I'm Mr. Zipe Mapsic. I like it.
Yes.
Cool. That's your alter ego.
That's right.
Much like actually, you know what? Just... Don't even, if you edit that out, I will be so pissed. We're keeping Zipe Mapsic.
You know what? We're keeping it in. From the AMC
Good
TV
deal.
Show Comic Book Men. He's going to join us for some questions. All this and a whole lot of smash and kapow on this episode of Breaking the Panel.
The year is 2015, and we, the geek, the nerd, the comic book fan, have inherited the Earth. The comic book now owns pop culture, and that's a worldwide phenomenon. Film, television, literature, even music. These days, it's all about the comics.
I am Arrow.
I'm Batman.
Supergirl?
What does S.H.I.E.L.D. stand for, Agent Ward?
I am Iron Man.
And I am Spider-Man.
Hulk.
Smash.
We're living the comics life. We're breaking the panel.
Hello and welcome to Breaking the Panel, your source for some comic book and pop culture news, and of course your full frontal nerdity. I'm one of your hosts, Brian Ibbett. Joining me, as always, Mr. Charles McFall.
Hey yo, everybody.
And to my right, Mr. Paul Klotz.
Hey yo.
Also joining us this week, he's one of the clerks at the Secret Stash, home to the reality show Comic Book Men, which just began its fifth season on Sunday nights on AMC. He's also a host on Smodcast's I Sell Comics podcast, as well as a new project with his fellow comic book man Ming called, well, The Ming and Mike Show. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show Mr. Mike Zapsik.
Everybody goes crazy. Yeah.
What's happening? Listen to the crowd going crazy
in the background. Good to have you here, man.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for having me.
No, listen, on Breaking the Panel, we may mess up your name, but we'll never mess up your phone number.
What a great guy.
Obviously, at the Secret Stash, you guys see your fair share of collectors come in, either buying or selling. What makes us as humans driven to collect things?
That's a great question. What makes us collectors? I think it's the old hunting and gathering kind of drive that some people follow sports, and you know, they're the guys who used to play the sports, and I think that takes, you know, the hunting part of it. But then the gathering, we're the collectors, we're the thinkers, we're the ones who, you know, created tools and weapons for the other guys to use. So I think that makes us just a little bit smarter and better than those guys who collect sports teams, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. Was there a time in our prehistoric life where we tried to get all the tools? We wanted one of each tool?
Of course we did. You know we did. And they all had to be mint in
leaves. Right.
Yeah. And we got the... We got the alt cover rock to help start the fire. Is that,
yeah. Hell yeah.
The variant branch, right?
Flint and obsidian, so you had to have one of each.
Yeah. Everybody else in the cave.
One to start fires with, exactly. Yep. One to start fires with, and the other one to keep fresh.
Yeah.
This is true. Have you ever collected anything that you're like, I did that. You bought the two versions, one to read or whatever, and one to keep fresh in mint condition. And let's say, you know, 10 years go by and it's still worthless.
Oh, of course. I mean, didn't we all?
Yeah.
I mean, can just one word, Valiant. I mean, Valiant Comics. Everybody bought one. I mean, The Second Life of Dr. Mirage.
Right.
Just starring Walt Willie. I mean, come on. does no one remember that?
I remember Valiant.
I think it might not have been Valiant, but I remember it was The Second Life of Dr. Mirage, and it guest starred Walt Willie. And if you're sitting there going, who the hell is Walt Willie? That a lot of people are like that. He was on All My Children.
Wow.
So, yeah. He was on during Sarah Michelle Gellar. I mean, he was there before her, but when she was there, he was huge.
Huh.
Exactly. Everyone's going. You're going on the wiki page right there.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I had all my comic notes in front of me. I didn't have any soap opera notes in front of me.
Well, that's what you have me for. So that's fun. And aren't comic books just soap operas?
Like, they really are. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've talked to so many people who are like, you know what? I'm out of comic books. I've been out of comic books for like 16, 17 years. And then I picked up a comic last month, and boom, I'm right back in. And it's like time stood still. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, you know, that's a soap opera.
Interestingly enough, that kind of ties into something else we wanted to ask you about. You're on a TV show about people who collect comic books, right? But mm-hmm. we are also existing in this world where suddenly we have like half a dozen or more different comic book based TV shows. There's all kinds of movies and everything come out. What are your thoughts on the current comic climate, if you will? And what's your like just your response to that as a comic fan, somebody who's been a comic fan for decades? You know what I mean?
It's the best time ever to be a comic book fan, I think. I think everybody else is catching up to us. Because we always knew. I mean, think about it in terms of your own lives. We always knew that these were great stories. This was literature with pictures. Mm-hmm. And now yeah. everybody's starting to catch up to us. And I know that a lot of the movies are a little formulaic, unfortunately. You know, I mean, Iron Man begat the Avengers, which, you know, is the same storyline as, if you boil it down, Man of Steel, which is the same storyline as, if you boil it down, Avengers Age of Ultron. It's all the same formula. Mm-hmm. Right. Just, you know, plug and play different villains. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually not much different than some comic book story arcs, right?
Kind of true. Yeah. You know, if you've never read it, one of my favorite books was Venom, The Vault, or Death Trap, The Vault, Death Trap. And it okay. starred Venom. And then they did something similar in Thunderbolts. They actually pulled different characters out and plugged them in a different way. And it was like, same story. What did they say? Smart people borrow, but geniuses steal.
Yep.
<Right. laughs>
This is the one with the prison, right? The vault, the Marvel prison.
Yes.
That okay.
In Marvel prison, yes. Which used to be, I think, Project Pegasus. And
right, the raft.
The vault. And,
right.
Yeah, like mm-hmm. the raft, sure. Mm-hmm. Wow, we're really geeking out now.
So that's a great, you know, a great lead in. We were talking about great storylines, great comic properties. Are there any that haven't been turned into TV or movies that you're just wishing, you're waiting for them to do, or that you really want them to do?
I'm waiting for Why the Last Man.
Oh, yes.
That, I think, is right.
And yes.
That, I mean, we've got Preacher coming up, and it's a Vertigo line, and Why the Last Man needs to be
yes.
on Showtime or HBO yes. or somebody who
talk
has
for
no
a while.
Problem.
There was talk for a while that Why the Last Man was going to be a TV show, a serial TV show, and I can't remember what happened with that.
Just like The Dark Tower, you know, Stephen King, The Dark Tower, keeps mm-hmm. falling through. We keep hearing, oh, Matthew McConaughey, yeah, he's going right. to be in The Dark Tower.
That's yeah, great. Just heard that today.
A Lincoln MK. Yeah.
You're dead, exactly. You're dead, you're dead.
Talking. Yeah. Stephen King's personal friend of mine. Thank you. Went down that road right there.
I read The Dark Tower before it was popular to read The Dark Tower.
Yeah, I read The Dark Tower before it was even written. I telepathically dream-linked with Stephen King and...
He used to read The Dark Tower in his underwear while playing the bongos, right?
Right, there we go.
Yeah, and why not? I mean,
well, I think
how else should he read The Dark Tower?
I think part of it, though, is these idiot studios take a small chance and do it wrong, and then, well, that didn't work. We're going to put this on hold. Because they basically did a movie version of Preacher that I thought was fun, but not really like the comic book at all.
Oh, what was it called? What was it called? Preacher?
I think it was called. I think it. I'd have to look it up. I made my wife watch it. It was cheesy. I remember the scene on top of the train where he's fighting the whatever it was, the vampires or whatever. I think it was called Priest. Actually,
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, really? No.
It was not a mainstream studio. It was not good.
They probably stole it, and
That was Paul Bettany, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Which is one of the reasons I watched it, because I like Paul Bettany.
Oh, okay.
They take these chances. We were just before the show discussing Supergirl and how apparently the first episode was decent, but then it took a really bad downturn. And we're looking at the promo shots for it going, that looks horrible. And it's on the wrong channel. We talked about this in the last episode. And you got to wonder how many other great shows that could have been made will get nixed because they went, hey, here's a girl in a cape and she's like Superman. Let's put her out there and it'll take off. And it doesn't if you don't do it right.
True, and I think they should have, you know what, you've got to get all your ducks in a row. Here's the funny thing. It's the same production company that put out Arrow and Flash.
Right.
Two very strong quality shows. And, yeah, if you watch the Arrow episode with Constantine in it, Matt Ryan, holy, talk about a guy who was born to play a role.
Mm.
I mean, I realized that Constantine, when Alan Moore created him and visually, he was supposed to be based on Sting, but my God, does he look like Constantine? And he just feels like Constantine. You're watching him, you're like, that's Constantine.
Yeah,
it's gonna be great having that ensemble show with Black Canary and Constantine and Adam.
Oh, Legends of Tomorrow.
Legends of Tomorrow.
That
would
be fantastic. There's so many out there right now. I think Planetary is one. Stormwatch could be well done if they do the Stormwatch that Warren Ellis was writing. Do Annihilation from DC, from Marvel, not DC, from Marvel. You like we've already been introduced to the Guardians of the Galaxy,
so we know
that there's like a cosmic element out there,
right?
And you've got the Nova Corps. How cool would it be if they did like the Annihilus wave?
Yeah. Nice.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any of the Adam Warlock stuff.
Yes.
Storm. So good.
Again, how awesome would that be?
Yeah.
Just nowhere. A floating skull in space.
Right.
I mean, they already showed it. What am I saying? Of course they did. But I think that would be just show us more of that.
So with you asking about more, there's a little, we have throwaway headlines that we just do little blips on that I haven't even told the guys about, but they're rebooting this, The Great American Hero?
Oh, The Greatest American Hero.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel about that?
How do I, if they don't do the blonde afro.
Thank you.
I'm not going to watch. I swear to God, I'm not going to watch it if you don't do that, because that was part of the charm of the show, you know? It's like, he was the
Mike
Shadow,
Post theme. Right.
You know, that was my blonde haired afro fix from back in the day.
I just remember it feeling like such a clean cut soap opera type shot show. Our producer Mike Woodard says that the Hourman is in development at Fox TV right now, or at CW.
Hourman would be fantastic. I happen to love the idea of, and that's a concept you can play with a lot, because here's a dude who depends on drugs to get his superpowers. And that's something that can, I mean, if handled right and handled well, it could be a breakout hit.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Couldn't, definitely. Probably not, well, I guess Fox TV, or you're saying it's on, it's being developed for CW, right?
Yeah, I thought it was Fox TV, but he says CW.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got a little bit more flexibility there than they would on a straight network show, so they can probably delve into those deeper topics.
He goes after drug dealers or something, and they're like, what the hell are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, you're popping pills and becoming a superhero. You're coming to me. For your stuff.
With the TV show adaptations of comic, how much do you feel like they can be flexible enough to veer from the storylines and tropes that we know from the stories and kind of veer off? I know you're a Batman fan, so I'm guessing you probably watch Gotham.
You'd be wrong. I'm really, I watched the very first one, and then, it never grabbed me.
It never grabbed
even
you?
It didn't. And even though I love the concept, I think that it is a story that needs to be told. It's, you know, the Batman, it's like the Jesus thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear about Jesus when he's born. You hear about him when he, He's like 10 years old, but then you never hear anything until he's like 33.
Right. There's so. We get the origin story, yeah. But we don't get.
Yeah, you're only getting part of it. You know what right. I mean? You see the cause, but you never see, and you see the later effect, but you never see. All right, his first thing isn't like, hey, you know what? My parents were just murdered in front of me, you know, about an hour ago. I think I'll become a superhero.
Right.
Right.
It's not that. He has to learn to cope with, you know, the loss. And what does he do? He directs all that anger inward, mm-hmm. and he becomes this obsessed, you know, freak of nature. And is anyone reading Batman right now?
No, I haven't been able to keep up the new one.
No? You know what? It's essentially, he's had the obsession and the hatred burned out of him by a Lazarus pit after at the end of Endgame. I'm sorry for spoilers for anybody out there. But, you know, if you didn't read it, go screw yourself. but essentially, he's like got this, all that anger, all that hatred towards crime and, you know, wanting to punish evildoers burned out of him. And now he's just this dude. He is essentially just Bruce Wayne. He's half of the equation. And for me, that was never satisfying enough. Mm-hmm. You know, here's this guy. You cannot teach yourself. If you're like, I'm going to become the nemesis of evil. And, you know, that's pretty good. Good for you. You can be the nemesis of evil. Everyone needs goals. So he goes and he does that. But you cannot train yourself to become a genius. You can't do that.
No.
It's inherent in you. And yes, his parents were both brilliant people, but he is one of the six smartest people in the DC universe.
Is he
essentially.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's what they usually say. So to burn the Batman out of him, he's still going to be a brilliant guy, right? But now
he's Hank
the new
Pym.
Batman. He's, yeah, exactly. Now you got Hank Pym, you know, right. and, don't let's not talk about like wife beating because that's a part of Hank.
So you've listened to one of my shows before.
so we're big Hank bashers. Ah, you bastard.
No, I like Hank Pym. No. Okay, so what I've always brought up was I like Hank Pym, but nobody ever deals with that dark storyline that I thought was so relevant and good
that
to his
yellow
character.
Yellow Jacket and Janet. Yeah,
that's all.
Oh, really? Did you not read Mark Miller? The reason I don't like Mark Miller, by all accounts, Mark Miller is like one of the sweetest guys you'd ever want to meet. A great guy to sit down at a pub with and drink like. What do Scots people drink like 83 gallons of beer in one sitting?
Whiskey, right?
Yeah. Like I said, by all accounts, just one of the nicest guys you'd ever want to meet. But his writing is very dark and mean-spirited, in my opinion. And when he did the Ultimates and Hank just beat the living piss out of Jan, that wasn't Hank Pym to me. Hank actually had one minute of being the guy that nobody ever wants to be. And he spent the rest of his time trying to make up for that.
Right. In the current, in the regular time, the non-ultimate timeline. Yeah.
In the non-ultimate, right. In the non-Mark Miller, right. But for me, it's always been, he had this one really bad moment. And then he spent the rest of his life trying to make up for that. And, you know, there was also a bunch of, I think when the Skrull invasion happened and Secret Invasion happened, and he was that guy again. He's like, oh, Jan, you're a jerk and blah, blah, blah. it rang false for me. It wasn't like, you know, he's not that. He was a brilliant guy who always felt a little overshadowed. And then he kind of triumphed over it. Now, for me, way off topic, sorry. So Batman, the between 12 years old and 25, when he first donned the cape and cowl, that's an important story to tell. Where is Wayne Enterprises in this period? What's he doing with that? Why isn't he, you know, trying to, A, hunt down his parents' killer, and B, using all the resources at his disposal to make crime a thing of the past?
Yeah, and Gotham really didn't get into that stuff until the second season. If you do get a chance to pick it back up, you know, I'm sure you don't have a busy schedule at all, Mike, but to binge watch Gotham, I would start maybe, you know, second season and pick it up there, because his current focus is finding his parents' killers and figuring out Wayne Enterprises and what his dad was up to and all that stuff. But kind of where I was going with that was, and we kind of talked about it in that question.
That was like, 2 hours ago, too?
It was, yeah. No, that's right. It's all right, because we actually kind of talked about it in there. The movie plot lines that veer away from the stories, the comic book stories that they're based on, the ones that we're familiar with and the ones that we know. And you know, how much of that do you think movies can get away with? Or
how far off the storyline can they go before we turn our back on it?
Exactly.
Oh, okay. I can give you a perfect example. Look at Arrow. I mean, Oliver Queen was never a murderer. And I mean, Oliver Queen in Arrow, he kills on a nightly basis. Sometimes, you know, you have failed this city, and you hear you failed this city, I expect to feel an arrow going through my heart. I'm like, oh shit, I hope I didn't fail the city.
Right.
Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the arrow doesn't.
No. We got to go back to the Jesus Batman thing. Our father who art is in Gotham.
Yeah, there you go.
That name.
I want to see the Bruce Wayne Jesus, like, teen angst buddy film. Some alternate timeline
awesome,
thing.
Yes, that's the next. Great. That's the next Netflix original coming.
That would be.
I think it would have to be, though, Jesus and Bruce as his sidekick. And I don't know if he'd, like, take to that.
Well, we know you have to take off. We want to ask you, in a typical day of the stash, how much does the filming of the Comic Book Man show intrude on your day-to-day business? How much does it throw your life
off?
Oh, my
God, all the time.
Is it like a standard reality show where it's there all the time? Or I've heard you guys talk about you have shooting days. How does that work for you?
Well, it goes like this. Essentially, we shoot between July and October, which is not terribly intrusive, but here's what happens. We open up shop at, say, 10 o'clock, an hour earlier than we usually do, and let people walk through, and then we get some background extras.
Right.
People who just appear to be shopping. They will shop later on, but they're in the background reading comics and generally messing up my shop, for God's sakes. So they're reading, and then we do a transaction at, say, 11. Then we'll do, it takes about 45 minutes to an hour to get all the shots that we need. So I figured between 11 to 12:30, that's one transaction. Then we'll, or 12, we'll take like 10 minutes, do another transaction, and then 2 o'clock we'll break. And then from 2 to 3, the store is open. And then from, say, 4 to 5, we'll do another transaction. And then from 5 to 6, we'll do, or actually it's like 5 to 5:30, we'll do some banter. We're sitting around the podcast table, actually just me, Ming, Brian, and Walt just sitting around talking about, hey, you know, what would happen if Batman slipped your roofie? You know, something like that. And the things that open up and the things that they intersperse between, you know, not the podcast table where we're sitting with Kevin answering his questions, but just, you know, we're just sitting around shooting the crap.
The more rundown and, poker table that you guys have at the stash.
The nasty one, exactly. The right, one with all of Brian's food stains on it. Smells like ass. So I actually shampoo that like once a month. It still smells like ass. So that's Monday through Friday between July 1st and October, say the middle of October, New York Comic Con, like first week in October. So
wow, so you guys just wrapped up then for the fifth season.
We did. We actually wrapped up a little bit earlier because we only had 13 episodes. Because of Into the Badlands, Better Call Saul, and the 90-minute Walking Dead that they've been doing.
Wow. Anything you want to tease from the second half of the fifth season for us? Stuff to look
for? Sure. We have a Rootin' Tootin' Good Time. Make that what you will. Let's see, what else do we have? I can say this because he's already been teased by Kevin. Jim Lee stops by.
Nice.
Oh, really?
That's actually really awesome. Cool. Yeah. We have a visit from another dear old friend who helps us bring a reservist who lost his passion back into the fold.
Oh, cool.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. We're not heavy on guest stars this season. It's a lot of just us.
And, right, like the Batcopter episode and the zombie preparedness episode. It's been fun stuff. It's been
thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of great stuff this season.
We had a lot of fun doing it. And we had a lot of fun.
Well, one last question. As you found as a business person, obviously you worked at the Stash long before the show, and you're obviously into comics long before that. Have you found that the show brings in more business and allows you to talk more about things you don't normally get to talk about, or has it just been there and fun?
Oh, it has been a great boon to us. Essentially it's a half an hour commercial for this shop.
Nice.
Like, come on in and, hey, you can see that at the shop, or you can see that and maybe buy that. That's part of it. But people just come in to see if we're working there. And it really freaks them out when we are, because Walt and I are there 5 days a week, and right. Every other Saturday, one of us will be there. So this Saturday, it's Walt. So if anybody wants to go over and see him, you'll walk in, you'll be like, oh, my God, it's that guy from Comic Book Man. That's really freaky. Right.
Yeah.
Tell him the Breaking the Panel sent them, and he'll have absolutely no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah, right. Or bend one of the comic books, and he'll freak out on you.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. No. I'll be honest, I was a little surprised when we called up the first time, and you answered the phone. And we're like, I thought I was going to have to jump through hoops. I thought at this point, because of the show, y'all would have, y'all wouldn't actually work there as much. You would have other people there, blah, blah, blah. Right. And we were like, hey, this is Mike. I'm like, no, really. Let me talk to Mike Zapsik, please.
Yeah. I have, like everybody else, I got bills to pay.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
I'm not making Chumley money over here. I'm not driving around in a Maserati and having liposuction and
that's awesome.
My teeth fixed.
That's awesome. But you guys do get paid for the show, right? I've always wondered that about reality TV.
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously they. Well, yeah, but again, not Chumley money. That guy, and what an actor, really. I got to just give him thumbs up on that. He is not Wooden at all.
Anything else you guys want to ask Mike before it takes off here?
No, I think
pile on, boys, come on.
Paul, you got anything?
Well, yeah, the thing is, I watched the show and I've been a fan of the show from the beginning. And
oh, thanks. And you and at your comic shop, your guys are much funnier.
I've never heard that before.
Right.
No, what I really wanted to ask though is like how canned are those banter moments? Because like in some episodes I feel like it's a legitimate conversation that you guys are just shooting the shit like you normally would. And then other times it feels like maybe you went through it once or twice and you're going through it again.
It might be that you're getting an edited version, but all that stuff is us. I mean, there is no script. That we're not a reality show there's no such thing as really a reality show, because anytime you introduce cameras, you're skewing it.
Right.
People become very self-aware and self-conscious of the camera being there. So your mind is going, and this is what freaks people out, because we've got 5 years of experience behind us. The cameras don't freak us out as much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to think really quick on your feet, what you're going to say, what you're going to do. There are a lot of times when I'm just sitting there going, I'm not swinging for this low hanging fruit. And I'll just let Brian do it because I know he's going to.
Right, right.
So, and especially when you're sitting at that podcast table with Kevin, Brian, and Walt, who have, between the three of them, Brian and Walt have 35 years of history together. Mm-hmm. And Kevin, Brian, and Walt, have you know, 20 to 25 years. So you're sitting there going, wow, this is amazing. They've got almost their own secret language, and they can fill in, they can actually finish each other's sentences. So for Ming and me, it's like getting a word in edgewise. Kevin does throw to us a lot more than the first two seasons now. Because basically before then, it was just me standing there, and you could, whenever I opened my mouth, you could almost hear crickets coming out.
Like, all right. Yeah. There was a noticeable amount of that, yeah. Well, the other thing I would say is what really stands out is how much you guys kind of pile on Ming sometimes.
And oh, hell yeah. I mean, sometimes it's well-deserved. Trust me.
But
did
the
you
best
hear
part
his
of-
Wookiee roar?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
He thinks it's good.
Yeah. I was going to say that I think the best part about it is he just seems like a glutton for the punishment. Like he seems a little dejected once in a while, but then he's like, he's fine again in the next scene, you know, in the show. So it's like, it seems like he just rolls with it pretty well. It seems like you guys have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, actually, I think it'd be really cool if they put that sad Charlie Brown music behind him whenever he gets knocked out.
Yeah,
exactly. And you'll notice that Ming takes shots at me because he'll never take a shot at Brian because it's sort of like anything that he throws up against Brian, Brian's going to brush off and then go after him with a vengeance. Right. So if there's ever a time that he can go after one of us, it's going to be after me. Because Brian's just too fast for him.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
Oh, yeah. He's amazing. It sounds like we're going to have Ming on to defend himself a little bit, though, after all this.
Should. Ming, are you kidding? Just say the word podcast. Ming will show up at your house with a gift basket.
Oh, see, I'm down. If it's a gift basket from the stash, he could come to my house anytime.
Right.
Nah, he's not allowed to poach from the stash anymore. Sorry, it'll probably be a muffin basket.
Mike, tell us where we can find. We know where we can find. We've talked about. I'd like to hear your voice say it. Where can we find all your great stuff that you're doing?
Okay, you can see us on AM. Well, not now, but when The Walking Dead comes back, you'll see Comic Book Men. We're doing an 8 episode cycle in, I think it's February.
Okay.
There's that. Ming and I also travel. We do cons. So just go to ZCS. ZCS, yeah, ZCS Entertainment. You can check me out at Michael Zapsik on Twitter. Follow me on Facebook. I've got a Mike Zapsik fan page. Ming and I do I Sell Comics on the Smodco network every Thursday. And Ming and I are also going to be doing the Ming and Mike Show, which is going on multiple platforms. It's already started. We're on Podcast Detroit. You can find us on iTunes. Everybody's on iTunes. And that's only some of what we've got planned. We've got a busy 2016 coming up, so.
Awesome. Nice. We need to get to Dragon Con in Atlanta. I think you would enjoy that.
You know what? I've wanted to. I think we put our submission in, and they said, wah, wah.
Are you kidding?
Really?
Wow.
Dear applicant. And they gave us a really, really crappy form letter. Like, dear applicant, thanks for your interest in Dragon Con. We're fully booked up, and you suck too bad. To come. Well,
there has to be some mistake, because if Charles here can get pro status,
I got pro status. I will tell.
Well, we want to be in the background, and also I love Atlanta because we were just down there for Walker Stalker, and we ended up at the Claremont Lounge.
Oh yeah, you did.
Portia gave me the guided tour, and I swear to God, you know, you can either look away or gouge your eyes out.
Yes, no kidding.
You know, I couldn't find a rusty spoon, so I had to look away.
Mike, we'll be in touch. You've been awesome, man. We're glad that you're on the show with us.
Guys, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Now we can carry on with the show.
Very good.
That was fun.
That was fun. That went really well. Success hasn't changed him.
Oh, that's so awesome. Honestly, that's the kind of person I want to be. Like, I want to be very successful, and I want to be down to earth. You know, be that same guy that, you know, what you see is what you get. And he seems to be that guy for sure.
Sure.
So we've got a few headlines, and then we can talk about what we're reading. So I guess I'll take the first one since it's mine. Okay. Frank Miller, who we just bashed greatly, apparently.
No. We bashed Mark Miller, not Frank Miller.
Mark Miller. See, I get them all confused.
There's lots of Millers.
There are. And it's spelled a little differently. Mark Miller is M-I-L-L-A-R, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, right. Because I used to actually call him Mark Millar because I didn't know how it was pronounced. Because I was like, it can't be Miller. It's got an A.
See, this is why I have you guys around me, because I would never get anything right. I mean, I get general facts. I remember random stuff, and I can make you, but you want me to tell you the difference between Frank Miller and Mark Miller? I don't know. That brown hair? I don't know. but Frank Miller reveals he'll be working on another Dark Knight book. There's been lots of talk about Dark Knight 3, The Master Race, which begins on November 25th at the end of this month with issue number one. How this will be the final chapter of the Dark Knight trilogy. Today, Frank Miller revealed in an interview with Newsarama that there will be a fourth installment. So the word was that it's going to be the last one, and now it's not. I'm going to read you his quote from...
But wait, there's more.
Yeah, right, exactly. Not just this new one that I'm coming out with. There's another one.
Because I have bills to pay, like Mike Zapsik. Mark says himself, I thoroughly applaud what Brian Azzarello is doing, but now that he's doing his, it's now a four-part series, Miller explained. I'm doing the fourth. So Brian Azzarello is currently writing DK3 book with Miller and with Andy Kubert and Klaus Janson on art. Mm. At New York Comic Con, Miller mentioned coming back to comics after Dark Knight 3 and working on a new Sin City book, but didn't reveal much more during the press conference. So I thought it was a nice little blurb that Miller will be finishing up. It's a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy trilogy, which actually had five books in it, which I thought was the greatest humorous thing ever.
It is, but it's cool to see Frank Miller doing the things that I think that people have said he does best, that I agree that he does best. The Batman stuff and Sin City, you know, two of the biggest things, probably a third being like Daredevil, you know, his run on Daredevil.
Yeah.
See, my whole thing is, I'm a little neg on this, I'm going to be honest.
Okay.
Because I wonder if he's lost the touch. I just feel like he's lost touch with what his best work, like where it came from, you know what I mean? It's one of those things, like, I feel like he might be a little bit tainted by his previous success. Mm. And so he's not hungry like he was in those early days when he was writing his best material. I'm a little bitter over, like, some of the developments of the last few years. Some of the stuff he's put out, I think, is really subpar to his other work. And then I really don't care for his personal politics, and because they bleed into what he does. You know what I mean? I mean, there was the whole Holy Terror thing, that thing that was supposed to be a Batman book that they had to be like,
that one I didn't read.
It was going to be a Batman book. And they're like, because he was going to go after terrorists and stuff and beat them up. Mm. And like, it was really violent and really racist. I'm sorry. I'm just throwing it out there. It's the truth. Okay. And DC was like, dude, we can't publish this as a Batman book. You know, they're like, you're going to have to change it. And so he did it as not Batman, basically, but it was originally Batman. You know what I mean? So like, you can read it and be like, oh, it's Batman. You know, I wonder what the quality level is going to be. You know what I mean? Sure. But sorry, I didn't mean to like steal all your thunder there, Brian, because you were like,
no. Hey, I'm still excited for it if it's, you know, if it's good. I mean, Dark Knight was fantastic. Dark Knight Strikes Again was good. This is the first actually I've heard of part three. So hearing that there's a part four and a part three, or part four coming just as he's getting ready to release a part three is definitely exciting, exciting to hear. But actually, I had no idea about his personal beliefs and all that stuff. So interesting to hear that perspective on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's something, explore it on your own kind of thing. You know what I mean? I don't want to taint anybody else's stance on him, but like, he had some pretty disparaging comments about like Occupy when that was all happening. And it came across as that guy who used to be kind of edgy and a man of the people, like punk rock. And then all of a sudden he turned into, the sellout that, you know, went off and got that typical life of like, got the real job, got the family, you know, and lost all of their perspective. And it just came across that way. And almost like, oh, I made my money and, you know, screw all those people who are talking about how they don't have theirs. And for me, like when I see it bleed into the work, it gets a little troublesome for me. You know what I mean? Like I have a hard time connecting with the work and enjoying it because I see it as like a vehicle to push personal politics when I really don't always think that comics are the best place for that. I mean, granted, politics will always be part of comics.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about literature with pictures, you know. Yeah. I think it should touch on some things without being
steal that from Mike. Okay?
Oh, totally like, stealing that from Mike.
You can't just start saying that after
100% stealing. Shut up, Ming. We're 100% stealing. No, I mean, but that point hit home because I just read Planet Hulk. And it was so, man, for me, it was up there with some of the greatest literature you read as far as the story arcs and the character development and the tragedy and folly and everything there. And then when he said that line, it's like, that's a great line, is literature with pictures. And not all of it is, but when you are attempting that, I think politics and racism and all that stuff play in without being too heavy-handed. It sounds like what you're talking about is way too heavy-handed. But yes, we get another education on Millar versus Miller, and it's I don't like it. So you have a headline here.
I do. Anyway. Why don't we jump to that
one? Yeah, let's jump to that one.
Neil Gaiman adds a stunning new layer of mythology to an iconic work in The Sandman Overture. So going from Frank Miller adding, you know, doing another chapter of The Dark Knight, we have Neil Gaiman doing his classic The Sandman, doing a new chapter for that. Sandman Overture may define itself as a prequel, but what Neil Gaiman and J.H. Williams, who's going to be drawing it, have crafted is far more ambitious and indescribable. There's a review from Paste Magazine. It's a missing puzzle piece to what many consider the best comic book series in the history of the medium. Overture charts the dire conflict that left the master of all dreams, Morpheus, weak and imprisoned in a debut issue that launched the same year Taylor Swift was born. I think that was 1989. But Gaiman and Williams III have also spun an intoxicating story that addresses questions not only about the first story arc of Sandman, but around tales laced throughout Sandman's epic 76 chapters. I put this in here because, number one, I'm a huge fan of Neil Gaiman. I have not read Sandman, but I'm guessing one of the two of you have, or maybe both of you have.
I've been meaning to be honest, because everybody who's ever into comics, Neil Gaiman is a hallowed name. Yeah, and they reference Sandman. I just honestly haven't gotten around to picking it up. And I know it was on a different label. I think it came to Marvel for a little while.
No, it was DC Vertigo.
DC Vertigo, okay. Yeah. I knew it got picked up by a major label at one point. But I haven't read it yet. Sorry.
Okay, well, I wonder if we should have this article in it.
Well, somebody who's listening has read it.
Right, yeah, exactly. But we can't really speak to its... It's history, I guess, without...
Sandman has been on the radar for me for a long time, and I've just never had the opportunity to get, you know, to sit down with it kind of thing.
Right.
But, I mean, Sandman is, like that article said, it's widely regarded as, like, one of the greatest examples of what can be accomplished with the medium, you know? Mm. So him getting the chance to go back in and add some stuff and add some layers and continue his storytelling in that world is fantastic. I mean, it's still, even if we haven't jumped into it yet ourselves, it's still something worth talking about, I think.
Yeah.
Forever.
George is gloating. Uncle George is gloating, I'm sure, in the background when he listens to this, because he is sitting on my nightstand upstairs is the Sandman compendium that he's lending me his copy of.
Right.
And I have not read it yet. I think I'll Hulu Gotham, or I'll watch last night's episode of Arrow, or I'll do this, or I'll do that. And Sandman just sits there collecting dust.
Mm. Well, I'm sure we'll hear about it at Coverthon.
We will definitely hear about it at Coverthon. And if we don't, you guys can bring it up.
Do you want to hit any of the Wheel of Fate news stories?
Absolutely. Let's spin the wheel on one of these and let's see what we get.
All right. 1 through 4, because we actually talked about 5 already tonight a little bit. Mm-hmm. So pick a number 1 through 4. Klotz, quick.
3.
Hey, we kind of touched on this a little bit tonight. This is the Flash showrunner signs a deal with Warner Brothers TV. So let me pull this link up. I'm not sure how I feel about it, because I have very much enjoyed The Flash. Arrow's been okay. I like the tone. Constantine was amazing. Mm-hmm. We've all heard about Supergirl. We're afraid to even look. But Andrew Kreisberg is already an executive producer for 4 different DC comic-based TV shows for Warner Brothers Television. and the studio is making sure he stays right where he is. The Hollywood Reporter has word that Kreisberg had signed a multiple-year overall deal with Warner Brothers TV, ensuring that all of his television projects for the foreseeable future will happen with them. As reported by THR, the deal will see Kreisberg develop new projects for WBTV in addition to his existing gigs, serving as showrunner for the CW hit The Flash, co-showrunner with Ali Adler for Supergirl, executive producer in both Arrow and DC Legends of Tomorrow. Along with Greg Berlanti and Mark Guggenheim, Kreisberg developed Arrow for the CW with the show. Now it's the fourth season. The three previously worked together at ABC series Eli Stone. I did not know that.
Didn't know that either. That's a funny pedigree to connect to. But
because it was a show that was before its time a little bit.
Right.
Kreisberg's TV credits also include The Vampire Diaries. I wouldn't list that. Fringe, which Fringe was excellent. It was up and down. It was hit and miss, but I liked a lot of the stuff.
Didn't Fringe, for me, Fringe was always fantastic.
I thought it was great until like mid season two or three. Then it kind of stumbled, then picked right back up and did well, I thought.
Okay.
Anyway, Fringe was great. Either way, you got a bit full-on support. Mm-hmm. My half support was still good. Warehouse 13, which I also loved. He's also written comic books, including Green Arrow, Vibe, and Helen Killer. I've never heard of that book. It sounds awesome.
That's one of those comics you come up with the name first, and then you try to figure out a character to fit it.
You're out drinking like, oh, I've got a great title, Helen Killer.
Helen Killer.
What's it about? I don't know. We'll have to make a book.
But she'll probably be blind and deaf. So interesting. I always thought that Greg Berlanti was showrunner of all of those CW shows, of Flash and Arrow. But knowing that there's that different, I mean, it's definitely got a different flavor than Arrow. This guy can definitely bring on more, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if we're basically saying, you know, this guy now with this deal that he just signed is going to be able to bring some more comic properties to Warner Brothers TV, which is CW or WB.
Right. Well, they sell it off to like Supergirl's on CBS.
Right, which is
that a Warner Brothers property? Is it?
It's the parent company of CW, yeah.
I thought I might. Once I said it out loud, I was like, wait a minute, I think they are connected.
So, yeah, I wonder what else he's got on his plate as far as – or what else he's getting out on his plate, but on his radar, things that he'd want to do comic book-wise in that universe.
I don't watch Gotham. I haven't caught it. I watched the first episode. It actually did grab me. I'm not stealing that from Mike. I actually liked it, but then Hulu dropped blah, blah, you know, the sob story. Mm-hmm. I haven't had time to go back and binge catch up with that. But in second season, which is titled Rise of the Villains, do you think they're going to touch on the Council of Owls?
Oh, I'm not familiar.
The Court of Owls.
League of Owls?
No, it's not. Damn it. That's a throwback to a whole other show that people probably haven't heard. No, it's the Court of Owls.
Court of Owls. So this is the Secret Crime Society. I'm looking this up. I have to. Because
have to, man. I've only got to read the first three parts that were at the library at the time. It's something that, if done right, goes way back in the time of Bruce Wayne's father and everything else.
They are hinting at some very dark stuff that Bruce Wayne's dad was involved with. So it's certainly possible. They're not touching on it for Rise of the Villains because they're too busy introducing and reintroducing folks like Zaz. And you're seeing Riddler season finally come into his own. Penguin, you know, obviously, and I don't miss Fish Mooney. I guess you're not watching it, so this is probably
that's fine.
Paul, are you watching it at all?
Yeah. I haven't. So, I mean, I've missed the most recent episode, but yeah, I've been mostly caught up.
And you don't miss Fish Mooney not being part of the show at all, do you?
Not really.
No.
Why? What's going on with that? Like, is she coming back?
No, we're just talking about how that this season has been focused so much on the villains, and we're seeing Penguin come into his own, and seeing Riddler start to develop as a villain, and all these other characters that we're kind of getting hints of. And I was just saying that, you know, these established characters, a couple of them that they had in the first season, including Fish Mooney, I don't miss her not being part of this at all anymore, because I think these pre-developed characters, it's kind of cool seeing how they create backstories for them or origins for them. And I'm perfectly fine with what they've got and not some of these.
Yeah.
They tried to shoehorn in there.
So I've kind of had this conversation with a few people before about Fish Mooney. Mm-hmm. I think she was a good character. I think she was well developed, and I think, you know, Jada Pinkett Smith was doing an awesome job. But she kind of, she doesn't fit. You know what I mean? Like she was kind of taking away from everything. You know what I mean?
To me, it felt like what I did see of her, it felt like they were adding a non-existent character to kind of set themselves apart as TV, and it felt superfluous.
Well, I think what they were really trying to do was to set up some tension, to set up everything for Penguin, basically. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there needed to be some rivalry in the crime underworld, you know, like that was the whole thing.
Sure.
And she played her part well, but like the whole thing where she was locked up for a while and all of that storyline stuff, I was like, what is this? Like, what is going on here? Like, because there's been no payoff on that. It's just this mysterious thing that happened.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean?
And it was its own little microcosm of this whole villainous understructure that has never been brought into the main storyline of, you know, with Jim Gordon and with, you know, the characters on, quote unquote, the mainland.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, no, I feel the same way, Brian. I don't really miss her, even though I did enjoy her performance. The scenes themselves were really fun. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like any scene she was in, the interactions were great. Her relationship with Penguin was great. But I think the show's overall better without her, you know? Mm-hmm. I think what we're getting on Gotham right now is so good. You know, like the guy who's playing Penguin is amazing. Like
he is really good. Yeah.
He just, I don't think, talk about being born to play a part. You know what I mean?
right.
And what's going on with Enigma, you know, that's really good too. Like, so yeah, these established characters are really shining on that show. I love Gotham. I could talk about, cause like, I love that show. That show is so good. And the fact that Bruce Wayne is such a small part of it in the grand scheme of things is great.
Yes.
And I love all the buildup that they're doing. Everything's great. So yeah, no, it's, cool. I don't miss her that much, unfortunately.
I think that's one of the things that turned me off of the show originally was when it was coming out, which, obviously, from what you're talking about now in season two, the title of the show is Gotham. It's about the development of the city and the development of what causes Batman to come back. Mm-hmm. But everybody's like, oh, you watch a new Batman show? And I have to say every time, it's not a freaking Batman show. Batman is not in it. It is not. And it made me so angry talking to them that I had a hard time even starting the show.
You might have rage issues.
I have a little bit. But I'm a huge fan of Batman. I almost pimp slapped somebody the other day. Because like, I'm a huge Batman fan. I love Marvel. I just stopped. I mean, I literally stopped and looked at him like I'm about to slap him. Like, oh, I mean, DC, like, you are not a Batman fan if you don't even know what universe he lives in. Right. I've got a tattoo that says I'm going to punch you in the face in a second. I wouldn't do that. I'm sorry. maybe a little bit. But the reason I asked about the Court of Owls is when I read, I looked at the wiki, our good producer, Mike Woodard, threw up the wiki page for us in our chat there. And I first started reading, was it the Night of Owls crossover? And so I didn't read the New 52 stuff and that led up to it. So it was new for me. It was just something I picked up. But what I was reading was Batman didn't even know about the Court of Owls. And essentially they ran the city, good or bad, and they were going to judge him in 24 hours. And it was this big thing. And you almost get this sense of dread reading that storyline that he had going, I don't know if he called himself the smartest man in the world, but he's arguably one of the smartest men in the world in that universe. And he's very aware of everything that goes on. He's very five steps ahead of everything. And he had no clue that this was happening and that was there. And that now he's having to fight for his life because of it. It was such a great surprise story arc to me that I really want to go back and dig into it. And I was wondering if they were going to possibly take Gotham to that area. Although Batman obviously wouldn't be involved, but they might set up the court.
Right. No, I think they might do that. They might do that with the whole darkness stuff that the Wayne Enterprises mystery stuff that that young Master Bruce is investigating right now. So, which would be a great thing. You know, they could do a little bit of setup this season and then make it the overarching story for season three.
Anything else? Do we want to talk about more stories, or are we good with the show right now?
I think we're good. I think this felt like a good, solid show, man. Yeah.
You know, honestly, it was so much fun having Mike Zapchick on. We talked about wanting guests on, and this obviously was our first real guest to have on. And it fits the show so well. And I was very glad that Chris Wisdom, big shout out to Chris Wisdom, and thank you for leading that charge and starting that conversation for us.
Do we have anything that we're currently reading, playing, watching that we want to talk about?
Well, I'll kick it off as always. Planet Hulk, I just read that for PXP, so I won't elaborate too much. But like I said earlier, I mean, I used to be an avid, voracious reader when I had a lot of time to sit and lose myself in a book. I could go through a huge novel in a day. And I don't have that kind of time now. So I try to consume it through other media, podcasts and movies and TVs, those kind of things, because I can do multiple things at once. But reading Planet Hulk took me back to those days of just consuming a massively well-written story. And I did not actually cry, but I was very... I did knock my microphone down.
I guess you're waving your hands around frantically, yeah. Talking about Riddle.
A little bit. It got to a moment, but I'd watched the DC cartoon, the animated movie that they made, which was really good, but it left out such depth that the story breaks. So I was already prepared for the moment that, had I not been prepared for, and we'll tell you, there's a moment in that story that if you didn't see it coming, if you have a heart, you're going to lose yourself on it. You really are.
Wow. And
it's so amazing. So we're going to talk about that on panel by panel. But this is for you guys now. I am at a point where I'm caught up for my prep for the show, so I'm looking for new suggestions of something to dig into.
It's not available in Marvel's Unlimited app, but it is a really, really good series that I started reading. It's called Saga. Okay. And I'm trying to remember. Who is it? I can't remember who the publisher is, but it's really good. And it's very well written. We talked about Why the Last Man. You've read those.
I read cover to cover, man.
Invincible, have you read?
It sounds familiar, but write it down.
That's where I would start. Pick up it's Robert Kirkman, who
I
also
love Kirkman,
does Walking Dead. And it's his superhero story. And it's very it's what you don't expect in superheroes. So, highly recommend
that's,
Invincible.
That's the book that pretty much got him the green light to do Walking Dead.
Nice.
I believe it.
Yes, I think I've heard it. Maybe that's why it's familiar. I think I read his backstory on how he got green lit for that.
Don't read anything else about it, because the fewer things you know about it, the better.
Okay.
But pick up, you can really cheaply pick up the first graphic novel collection on Amazon for just a few bucks, and you will love it. You'll be hooked.
So I heard add that to my Amazon wish list for others.
Yeah.
And of course I do support, I won't throw this out. We don't get thrown out very often, but support your local libraries. If you go and request comic books, if you go and request graphic novels, they will fulfill those requests. Maybe not immediately, but slowly over time, if they know there's a demand, they will do that. I'm lucky to have a great municipal public library here in town that has a huge comic book selection where people have donated just entire collections. That's how I read Why the Last Man from cover to cover. The whole collection was there. Civil War, same way. So support your local library. I'm going to go look up these titles there. One I'll throw out that I did read a little bit of, I think it's Brian Michael Bendis, Powers, which I believe is getting a TV treatment right now.
Already been. And
first season was out on PlayStation. Yep.
And not widely regarded as very good.
it was not bad.
Oh, really? Oh, I heard from a couple people that it was bad. But hearing that it's good from you might change my opinion.
He didn't say that now, Emmett.
No. I don't think it has the same budget that something like the CW has, you know, like, so I don't think it's got the budget that Arrow or Flash have, but the story itself is interesting. It's actually very interesting. The performances from the actors is really good. Like it's It's worth a watch.
So is it like Community on Yahoo TV, Yahoo Screens?
No, it's okay. It's on PlayStation, and you have to go into the PlayStation Store to get it. But if you have a PlayStation Plus membership, I think you get it for free. And the entire first season's up there, up on there now. And the second, they greenlit a second season, so it's getting more. You know, That's awesome. It's not like it. But yeah, no, I mean, it's you got to realize it's a bit of a departure from the normal delivery method. You know, so it's. I think that kind of hurts it in a way because it doesn't have the same audience exposure that it could get on a network or something like that. And it's not on any of the major streaming.
Well, that's a very locked out service. I mean, you have to have a PlayStation to get it.
Which is the issue, But it's – I mean, the execution is – it was a little bit of a slow roll at first, like to really get the story moving. But by the end of that first season, it's really interesting. And it's – the kid gloves are off. It's a serious, violent, at times, you know, show. So it's not like CW stuff.
Nice.
So yeah, no, I would, if you have access to it, I would give it a chance. If you don't like it, I'm sorry. I've steered your
mind. I'll definitely give it a chance. I was steering away from it because of what I'd heard, and you and producer Mike both recommended it. So that might be enough to.
Oh. Eddie Izzard's in it? Sold. Done.
He's really good. Like
he's good in everything. He made Minutemen an okay watchable movie.
Minutemen.
I haven't
seen it. Come on. But no, is it Mystery Men?
The one with Ben Stiller?
Oh, Minutemen was a stupid game I played. Yes, Mystery Men was the movie.
Oh, Charles, don't ever change.
I promise I won't. Mystery Men. He made Mystery Men watchable.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of crap. And he was the best part of the new Monsters. It actually was a special pilot episode that they did that they never picked up, apparently. So what are you guys reading?
I'll go next. reading currently Secret Wars on Marvel Unlimited. It's, you know, it's cycling up, so we're now starting to get the trickle of Secret Wars books. I'm currently in issue 2, which is gorgeous. I will say this, on the iPad Pro, reading comics is a whole different experience than on smaller iPads. It just, you know, it basically feels more like you're reading a comic than it does on smaller ones, because on smaller ones I'd be tempted to do the thing that only shows you one panel at a time. So it's kind of this cool interactive slideshow experience. With the iPad Pro, I see the whole page in full size, maybe even a little bit bigger on my screen, and I guess I see it the way that the artist drew it, you know, drawing the whole page with some of those elements, those things that carry through multiple panels that are really cool. There's a game that I've been playing that on the iPad that's available. I want to say, I know it's all available for all the iPads and iPhones, but might even be available on Android, but it's called Agent A, and it's a really cool mystery puzzler. I don't want to say a lot about it, but it's really, really well crafted and has a comic book feel to it. So, worth checking out. And, really that's it. Just got Fallout 4 and haven't really had much of a chance to play it, but, looking forward to getting into that and, the new StarCraft expansion. So that's what's on deck for me. How about you, Paul?
I'm a mighty, mighty man and I'm young and in my prime. Which if you're playing Fallout 4, you get that reference.
Okay, I haven't gotten to it yet.
No, I haven't afforded to buy it yet.
I just got out of Vault 111, so that's how far I've gotten in Fallout 4.
Well, you're both ahead of me.
I've been playing Fallout 4 pretty much as humanly possible, doing little else but playing Fallout 4, to be honest. I didn't get it right away on Tuesday when it came out, but... because I couldn't afford it. And then one of my close friends happened to have an extra copy, which he graciously gave to me. So I have been able to play it. Shout out to Dave. Thank you very much. His wife will listen to this, but he probably won't. if not for them and their very, very gracious gifting of it to me, I would be very sad, Paul, right now, because I am a huge fan of the franchise. In my formative years, you know, like early teens, My best friend and I, we played Fallout and Fallout 2 and Fallout Tactics on PC way back in the day. And then when Fallout 3 came out, I was a huge fan of it. I actually have not gotten to play New Vegas very much yet because it didn't run well on my PC. So I have to try that again someday once I've binged on Fallout 4. So Fallout 4, fantastic. It is similar to 3 in New Vegas, but it has some obvious quality of life improvements. And the big thing is that they have really expanded the gameplay with the new settlement feature, where you get to basically find these settlements all around the Commonwealth and set them up. You get to build your bases, and you get to build multiple ones.
That's what I hear. Yeah, you get to tear them down and use the parts to build up the things you need, and that's nice. Really cool.
Yeah, and you can do some incredible stuff. It's something. The best thing about Fallout 4 is that it's a Bethesda game, so that means that a little bit down the road here, the creator kit's going to get released, and then the modding community is going to go wild. There's already a few mods because it's still using the same engine that Fallout 3 and New Vegas used. Mm-hmm. So people who are really good at making mods for those are already comfortable with it. But like, the creator kit will go out, so just everybody can do it. And so right now, like, the way I look at it is you play through the base experience, play the story, get to do all that stuff. And then later on down the road, you have infinite replayability because you can go grab a bunch of mods and throw them in and change the experience, you know. And mods will range from like quality of life stuff, like they'll clean up the interface or offer options on stuff that you don't normally get, to legitimately adding like new textures and new content and stuff like that. So it's infinitely expansive if the community is there to do it. And they will be. It's been, you know, we talked about on From the Helicarrier way back earlier this year when they tried to monetize Skyrim mods, and how the community was like, don't do that.
And,
so it's the same thing. I mean, it's essentially the same engine as those games, Skyrim and the other Fallout games. So I am really excited for what's going to happen going forward. It's already a great game. It's just so good. I mean, I have literally got over 60 hours in. I'm not going to lie to you guys.
Wow.
Since I got it, I've been playing at least like 6 to 8 hours a day, which is, it sounds terrible when I say it out loud, but it's the truth.
You're making me sad, man. Not only do I not have Fallout 4, I just realized I had Fallout New Vegas on my Xbox 360, and now I have an Xbox One, so I cannot actually download it until they somehow port it. And I'm like, then when that realization hit, you mentioned, I was like, I got a little tear about it. I was like, I can't even play Fallout Vegas. Oh my God.
Hashtag PC Master Race.
Yeah. So I'm glad to hear such a glowing review from it because I love Fallout. And I wonder, every time they come out with a new one, will this be the one that's the death or the garage days of Metallica? You know? Would it be Saint Anger for Metallica?
It was Garage Inc. You can get nothing right, McFall.
Not now. Now it's dud, man. Now I'm just going to like... It was actually Saint Anger that I was thinking of, but still.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's it. I think that takes us to the end of yet another episode of Breaking the Panel. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you want to get in touch with us, we have all that in the outro audio, don't we?
I believe we do.
Well, just listen to that, and you'll know how to get in touch with us. For Paul, for Charles, for Mike, and big thanks to our guest, and for me, Brian Abbott, this is Brian Abbott saying thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Breaking the Panel.
You might need to end the show every time. That was
Why is that?
Very professional.